So thanks very much for inviting me and for organizing this conference. In fact, I was hoping to present research in progress on energy transition. I know there is a colleague, Kathleen, will present on that topic, but we've not made enough progress to be able to present what we are currently doing on that. So I will present older stuff that I've been doing on endogenous direct technical change in green versus dirty innovation. So we call that path dependence in clean versus dirty innovation. And what I present is just essentially based on two papers. One is published and one is forthcoming in the JPE, in the Journal of Political Economy. So the motivation for this line of research is the observation that the main climate change models, in particular Nordhaus, and if you read the Stern report, which very much based on the work of Nordhaus and Marty, and assumes mostly exogenous technological change, and then a lot of the debates revolve around how you evaluate the risk and correspondingly the discount rate, but in fact we think that introducing factoring in the fact that firms not only decide to produce clean versus dirty, but also decide whether to innovate clean or dirty, in fact, has a lot of consequences on how you should think about optimal policy and even about the debate on the discount rate. So what I will present today is I will summarize the results from a paper in the AER with Darren Acemoglu, Leo Burstein, and David Emous. And I will mainly talk about the paper with Antoine de Chez-le-Prêtre, David Emous, Ralph Martin, and John Van Rienen, which is forthcoming in the JPE. So the main question is, how important is lock-in or path dependence in the choice of direction of innovation, whether you innovate in inventing machines that produce dirty inputs, or if you innovate in machines that are used mostly in the production of clean inputs? And more generally, what kind of externalities, knowledge externalities, are involved there? In fact, what happens is when you introduce endogenous technical change, you have two kinds of externalities that interact. You have the environmental externality, and you have the knowledge externality. And all the action revolves around the interplay between these two externalities. Okay, and that's what this is all about. And of course, then is how do firms respond to policies, in particular to carbon tax or to subsidies or to other things, by changing the direction of innovation. So the empirical paper that I will present is very much based on the patents in the auto industry, because you can classify patents between what we call dirty patents, that mean patents that pertain to technologies for producing, that are used in combustion engines, and clean patents, which are patents that pertain to technologies for producing or improving electric vehicles. And what we will be able to know is that we can classify patents in the auto industry, cross-country panel, dirty or clean, and we know for each patent, the history of patenting by the inventor. So we know what the inventor has done in the past. And one result that we will get is that you tend to keep doing what you already do very well, unless you are induced to do something different because government intervention. So typically, if you are better at clean technologies already, you will tend to keep doing innovating in clean. But if you are better in dirty, under laissez-faire, under no government intervention, you will tend to go into dirty. That's, in fact, a very important justification even for industrial policy. I mean, beyond the climate, there's been a huge debate since the 1980s and Kruger and others, questioning the need for any kind of industrial policy. There was the view that if you believe in markets and innovations, you should just have, the state, who should be, the government should only be about law and order, but certainly not about an horizontal targeting, but certainly avoiding, targeting sectors. And here it's one argument in favor of, no, you may want to redirect technical change. If you know that on the, left on their own firms innovate dirty, but you know it will take government action to redirect technical progress. Okay, so we focus on the auto industry because we have these patent data, we can classify dirty and clean. And so that's cool. And also, what's nice is that we know that transport accounts for about 25% of global CO2 emissions. So we are dealing with a sector which matters for which obviously matters for you. Just we are in Paris, you know. Paris, you know, there are days where Paris is overpolluted a lot due to you know, to traffic and cars. Okay. And you know, there is a literature, obviously. The papers that influenced us the most are the paper by David Popp, which is a kind of precursor to the empirical paper that I will talk about, where he uses U.S. patent data between 1970 and 1994 and finds a positive effect of energy price on energy-efficient innovation. But he uses macro data, so he cannot control for time dummies. He doesn't have the past dependence that I was talking about, and we go more into firm-level data, okay, which is more now, more and more patenting literature goes very much micro. We look at individuals and firms. And there is also this other paper by Noel Jaffe and Stavins on air conditioning. Theory, very briefly. So the paper with Daron, Leo Burstein, and David Emus, it's just reminding, I presented it here 4 or 5 years ago, it was a long, so I just summarized the paper. We had a final output produced with clean and dirty inputs. There was a parameter, epsilon, which corresponds to the elasticity of substitution between the clean and the dirty input, and that parameter turns out to play as important a role as the discount rate. So the whole thing revolves around, okay, the discount rate is this, but what is the substitutability between clean and dirty input in producing final output? Now, the dirty input is dirty because the production of dirty input depletes the environment, and there is a lower bound that if you achieve it in the model, you get into disaster. It means that you cannot reconstitute the environment. We call that an environmental disaster. Okay. And now if you take every input, they are produced with labor and machines. And the machines are more or less productive, and the productivity on those machines is what is improved by innovation. So you have scientists in the economy, and the scientists can decide whether to improve the productivity of machines that are used to produce the clean input, or if they want to improve the productivity of machines that improve the dirty that produce the dirty input. Okay, and of course the scientists will go where it's more profitable. Okay, and that's what will happen. So as I was saying before, there are two main externalities: the environmental externality, so which is represented like this. This is the quality of air at time t plus 1. It's the quality of air st, 1 plus delta. Delta is the rate of regeneration of air, or absorption of CO2, whatever. And this is the extent to which the dirty production, yd is the production of dirty input, deteriorates the environment. And if you are in a situation where if people only innovate in the production of in the productivity of machines producing the dirty input, what you will have is that YD will grow without bound, and at some moment S will reach zero, and when ST is equal to zero, then ST plus one is equal to zero. It's an absorbing state. You don't want to get there. You want to avoid that. Okay, and. So that's what we say here, absorbing the lower bound, no fresh air, is a, you know, we call that an environmental disaster, okay? So the scientist, essentially, he compares the expected profit from innovating on machines that produce the clean input and the expected profit on innovating on machines that produce the dirty input, and you have various effects. This effect is the path dependence. Typically, my profits are proportional to the productivity in doing something. You see what I mean? And the productivity is a certain factor times the previous productivity. So if I am already very good at dirty, typically, it will push towards pi d being greater than pi c. You see what I mean? That's my path dependence. So if it, particularly, if I had perfectly substitutable inputs, to produce the final good, that would be the dominant effect. If I am initially much better at the dirty, I will keep innovating in the dirty, which means that the ratio AC over AD will keep falling, and therefore, even more tomorrow, I will innovate in dirty, and then I get into the disaster because YD will grow without bound, and you grow, and you give. You have a counteracting effect, which is the price effect, because suppose that you are better at producing the dirty input than the clean input. It means that the dirty input is more abundant. But if it's more abundant, its relative price relative to the clean goes down. But that is a counteracting effect because your profit is proportional to the price of each type of input. So the price effect is a counteracting force. But when the two inputs, dirty and clean, are perfect substitute in producing the final good, the price effect disappears. And the more substitute the inputs are in producing the final good, the less important this price effect is compared to this path dependence effect. That's why this parameter, which is the elasticity of substitution between the clean and the dirty input, is so important, because it will tell you the extent to which the path dependence effect, which we call direct productivity effect, is counteracted or not by the price effect. And that's the whole logic of the model, okay? So particularly, we can show that when epsilon, which is the elasticity of substitution between the clean and the dirty input in producing the final good, is greater than 1, and the economy starts from a level AD0 much bigger than AC0, left on its own, the economy will go to a disaster. Okay, so that's what this model predicts. So the main findings of the model, so it's exactly what I just wrote here, said what I said here. If initially dirty machines are much more productive than clean machines, and clean and dirty inputs are sufficiently close substitute, the epsilon parameter is sufficiently large, then the economy under laissez-faire will run into environmental disaster. The other thing that we find is that in that model, you remember you had the debate between Nordhaus and Stern saying, you know, what is the discount rate? I'm being extremely caricatural here. But in a sense, if you believe that the discount rate is low, you mean that you put a lot of weight on the future generations, and you say in that case, you should not put enormous carbon tax today because you should put enormous carbon tax today because you worry mostly about the future generations. If on the other hand you believe that the discount rate is high, you mean that you put a lot of weight on the current generations, and in that case you don't want to be too tough. You might want to have a policy which is more progressive. Okay, that was the debate there. But here, when you have endogenous direct technical change, you change the term of the debate. Because even with the Nordhaus discount rate, you may want to go right away. Why? Because that's what I call the parable of the dentist. You know, if you wait to go to the dentist when you have a cavity, the cavity will become worse and the drilling will be tougher. You know, typically, what do you want to do? You are better at dirty than clean. What should I should do? I should tell you, don't innovate dirty. You can only innovate clean until you become as good on the clean as you were on the dirty. Then I can stop, because I know that you always go for the technology where you are better. You see, if I wait until I intervene, the gap between the dirty and the clean will increase, which means that the period where I will force you to go on the thing you are less good will be longer. So the period of lower growth will be longer. It's exactly like my drilling will be more painful, you see. And so even if you have a discount, and in fact what we showed, we did simulations on the model, we looked at, we compared the discount rate of Nordhaus and the discount rate of Stern. And in the case where you have a high elasticity of substitution between the clean and the dirty input, we simulate the optimal policy. This is the optimal allocation of scientists between clean and dirty sector. And the yellow is the Nordhaus discount rate. The blue is the Stern discount rate. You cannot distinguish them. You see that when you have high substitutability between the clean and the dirty input, you want to act right now, even with the Nordhaus discount rate. Okay? So it's a different thing when you have a low elasticity of substitution, then the price effect becomes big, and then it makes a big difference whether you have a discount rate a la Nordhaus or a discount rate a la Stern. Okay? So that's very interesting. It means that it's not enough the discount rate. You need to know also the elasticity of substitution between the clean and the dirty input. Okay? So that's what comes from this analysis. Now the third thing that we got from that model is that disaster can be avoided through combining a carbon tax and subsidy to clean research. And in fact, we can show that the optimal policy, we have two externalities, environment and externalities and knowledge. So you need two instruments. And so if you do all by carbon tax, you need to put an excessive carbon tax, and the cost, on particularly on current generation, will be too high. Whereas if you combine the carbon tax with research subsidy to clean innovation, then it's much better, because the carbon tax will deal mainly with the environmental externality, whereas the research subsidy will mainly deal with the knowledge externality. And this way, you can have a policy which is much less painful. Okay, so that was the finding from that model. Okay. So now you can extend it in several directions. One we already did is to have a north-south model. In fact, with this framework, you can rethink Copenhagen and try to say, I hope that Paris will be better. Because in fact, you imagine yourself with the north and the south, okay? And China, for example. And China says, look, guys, it's very nice. You want us to be good guys, but when you industrialize, you polluted a lot. So you ask us things that you didn't impose on yourself. So that's a constraint, that's a problem. But we can tell them, look, but the difference between you and us is that you can benefit from our clean technologies. We could diffuse them to you. When we industrialized, we had nobody from whom we could take clean technology. That's the knowledge externality. But it's a north-south knowledge externality. So what you can do is that you can show that, in fact, when you have this knowledge externality between north and south, where the south imitates the technology invented in the north, it might make sense for the north already unilaterally to move ahead, to go to make progress on the clean technology. When the clean becomes sufficiently good, it will be adopted by the south. And that's what we showed in that paper where we have a north-south. But of course, there can be one danger, is that if you have free trade, there can be some countries may turn into what we call a pollution haven. They may say, well, if the North decides to go clean, we will take advantage of this to turn into a pollution haven, to have all the dirty industries, the multinationals that produce dirty, in our place, and then we re-export there. And then, of course, it's a problem to have unilateral policy in the North because of the free trade. But then you can have a solution. You can say, with this, putting that together, you can tell the South, look, the difference between you now and us when we in the 19th century is that you can imitate our clean technologies. They can tell us, yes, but make them accessible to us. That's the whole debate on intellectual property rights. So, of course, we have to make them accessible to them. But it's not obvious because you want to reward the innovators that invented the clean patents in the North. So how you reconcile that? Alors maybe the sovereign wealth funds, the thing that Patrick, the thing that you are involved may help solve that problem is how you both reward the innovators of clean technologies in the North while diffusing them. It's like the malaria, it's like what Michael Kremer did with medicines. You know, you want to give incentives for medical research in the North, but you also want to diffuse vaccines in the South. You have a similar problem there. But then you could say some countries could turn into pollution heaven. And then you can say, well, carbon tariffs can play a role. So then in that framework, you see that intellectual property rights and carbon tariffs come into play directly. And you can say, look, you should, if we make available to you the clean technology, you should adopt them. If in spite of that, you decide to not do that and turn into pollution heaven, we have carbon tariffs. But I think in this framework, you can bring these elements, this term of negotiation into the debate. Okay, so that was it's a paper we did subsequently 2 years ago with Darren and David. Now, the one we are currently working is the idea to say, well, you could allow for intermediate. Suppose you want to go from coal to aeolian. And then the question is, should you go through nuclear and shale gas or not? And should you allow for production and research in nuclear and shale gas? Or should you do like me, I like very much Angela Merkel. I just came back from Germany. I like very much her policy on refugees, but I'm less fond of her policy on climate. I think they took the position in Germany to say, no, we go directly from coal to aolian. As a result, they go more for coal. That's what they are doing. Huh? And so we are developing a model now, but we are still working on that. What happens if you allow for production and research on shale gas or nuclear? And there you have, in a nutshell, you have various effects. On the one hand, of course, in the short run, you will reduce the production and innovation in coal or in machines that use coal. So that will be good for the environment, everything else equal. But the downsides are two downsides. On the one hand, it may have a scale effect. It may mean that you produce more, and that will pollute more. And on the other hand, it may delay the transition to aeolian. You see, there is the thing that if you go to the intermediate, you may delay the transition too much. But the positive effect is that you have immediately a substitution. And so all revolves around how the substitution, the scale effect, and the getting trapped into the intermediary effect play out with each other. And what we are trying to do now is to calibrate and to see with the parameters that we will get, which can we show that the substitution effect dominates the other two. Then you have a serious case for energy transition, for having nuclear shale gas. If you don't have that, it goes in the direction of the German. So you go directly from coal to aeolian. And that's where we are. That's why I was hoping I could present today, but we are not yet there. I prefer to wait and have a paper I'm happy with to present it, okay? So instead of doing that, I will move into the empirical paper, okay? So, and the empirical paper is this auto industry. So it's De Schelleprete, Emus, Martin, and Van Rienen. So there we use cross-country panel data on innovation in auto industry. We show the existence of path dependence in clean versus dirty innovation. It's not totally obvious you should have path dependence. You could have imagined that you have decreasing returns. You could imagine that if I have done a lot of clean innovation in the past, I would run into decreasing returns, and therefore I would go into the type, you see? In fact, you show that you really have path dependence. And we show also that increase in the fuel price, for example, resulting from carbon tax, will increase, there is a typo there, obviously, will increase incentives for clean R&D relative to dirty R&D, for clean innovation relative to dirty innovation. So those are the main findings. So what we will do is that we have a firm level data. So we have firms in various countries, and we do firm level regression. So we look the number of triadic patents clean. Okay, triadic, why triadic? Triadic means that the patent is registered at the US Patent Office, the Japanese Patent Office, and the European Patent Office. Those tend to be the most significant patents, the best patents. So we restrict attention to the triadic patents. And so we look at how the flow of clean patents by firm I at time t depends on various things. It depends on the price. This is the fuel price, okay? So what we expect is that if you have a higher fuel price, you should have more patenting in clean. That's the first thing, okay? We would hope that carbon tax works. You see what I mean? Well, that's the first thing we hope on the direction of technological change. But there are two terms. This is the firm's own innovation stock. I told you before that for each firm, I know the history of patenting of the firm. So I know if the firm was very much innovating clean or innovating dirty. And that will tell me, and in fact what I will find is that if you have this path dependence, okay, so that's the term. That's the stock of clean patents, and that's the stock of dirty patent by that firm, by time t, quoi. You see? And then you have the spillovers, and the spillovers is the extent to which, you know, the researchers that work in my firm are from countries that are dirty or clean. You see, I know how much clean and dirty the countries where my researchers, are coming from. So that will be, if, for example, most of my inventors come from countries which are dirty, then it will have an effect making me more innovating dirty. That's a contemporaneous externality, you see? And you look at the level of the countries where innovators come from. So you have the two types of externality, your own past innovation and the countries that influence you most. That means the countries where your innovators come from. And we know the location of the innovators, you see? And that's how we do the contemporaneous spillover. So I have to go, I have 5 minutes. So, it might be 5.5, but I will. So the data is World Patent Statistical Database at the European Patent Office. All patents filed in 80 patent offices worldwide. We extract all patents pertaining to clean and dirty in the automotive industry. We track the applicants, and we know about the history of patents. We know if there were more dirt, the stock of dirty, the stock of clean. Okay, and so here we—I don't want to go into the, you know, the OECD classification into what pertains to electric and hybrid. We call that clean, or what pertains to combustion engine. We call that dirty. But you can also change it. You can call clean only this, and the rest dirty. It doesn't change the qualitatively the result. Okay. And we focus on triadic patents, that's what I told you, and the period is 1978-2005. We can count the number of patents in dirty technologies, the number of patents, it's cross-country, panel, and we know the patent holders, okay? And we know how many are firms and how many are individuals, okay? And so the policy variable, you have the fuel price, but the problem with fuel price, we are looking at firms. Firms that are selling in various countries. So ideally, I should weight the fuel price by the, you know, if you are twice more in one in country A than in country B, you should give twice as much weight to the price of carbon in country A compared to country B. We don't have the market shares. We know the share of patenting, but we know that for some companies, like Ford, for example, there is common tonicity between market share and how much you patent in the different countries, okay? So we weight, in fact, the fuel, the carbon price in the various countries by the share of patenting of that firm in the different countries. And we construct a firm-specific price variable this way, okay? And that's the contribution of the paper. So for example, here is the case of Ford. You can look at various countries, the car sales shares of Ford and the patent weights of Ford. And you can see that essentially it's comonotonic. Where Ford patents the most is also where firm has the higher market share. So for Ford, we could have used directly the market share. But for other companies, we cannot. That's for other companies, Toyota, Volkswagen, well, no comments, Peugeot. So just one thing. So this is how you construct the stock of patent, clean or dirty. It's the current flow plus one minus delta, where delta is the depreciation factor, times the stock, the previous stock that you had. And that's how the stock evolves over time. You see what I mean? Like any, like capital, you know, like when you evaluate the dynamic of capital stock. Huh? And spillovers, for the spillovers in dirty for firm I at time t, it's the weighted sum of the spillovers, is the weighted sum of the spillovers of a country, of the various countries where your researchers come from, in the different type of innovation, weighted by the importance, how many innovators you have from dirty, you know, from each country. And that gives you the spillover. And that's the main result, okay? So if only you get this table, it gives you most. You can see, so the left-hand side is the amount of clean patenting, the flow of clean patents. That's the flow of dirty patents by firm I at time t. We see that the flow of clean is positively affected by the price of fuel, and the flow of dirty negatively. So carbon tax works, not only for producing less, but for innovating in the right direction. That's comforting. That's the first main result, okay? A carbon tax is worse, so that reinforces, you know, you negotiate on price, it has a big effect on the direction of innovation, okay? Second thing is that you have here the spillover. You see that if I had more, a bigger stock of clean innovation, I am more, my propensity to innovate clean today is bigger, whereas dirty has no effect. Dirty has the opposite effect. My previous stock of dirty has a negative effect on my propensity to innovate clean. That's the path dependence. And then you have the spillover. That's the spillover. That's the path dependence. Sorry, that's the stock of dirty. That's the clean spillover and the dirty spillover. This is the on stock of clean, and this is the on stock of dirty. Alors, what's interesting is that you have a positive effect of the stock of dirty, on your current clean, but less than the effect of your stock of dirty on your current dirty. So if you were to look at the extent to which you innovate more clean than dirty, the difference, then the stock of dirty makes you go more in the direction of dirty than in the direction of clean, you see. So that, so what the you do very, we do all kind of robustness tests. I don't bother you with, okay? I want to do, I want to just look at, we use fuel tax instead of fuel price. The thing is that you can use this model to simulate the effect of changes in fuel tax compared to the baseline case, and where you do nothing. And you want, so for example, here, you say, I do nothing, and that's what will happen. I start in 2005, that's my base year, and I do nothing, and I count on, you know, doing nothing. So there, of course, the clean knowledge will never catch up, essentially, with the dirty knowledge, okay? And you run into trouble. What happens if you put a 10% increase in fuel price? You see the curve move a bit closer. 20% increase in fuel price, 40%, and you see that 40%, 40%, my God, I have to just, I just have to go to the diaporama. 1 second. Let me just go there. So what you have is that, 1 second, I'm getting there. You see, you need 15 years of a 40% increase, and then the clean catches up with the dirty, and then you could stop the clean, you see, because then you could stop the tax, because the clean technology will be as good at it as you are at the dirty, and then we know that you go for what you are better of. So just to give you an idea of how big you need the tax to be if you want the policy not to last too long, okay? So it just tells you that with the you know, with the estimated coefficient that we have, if you increase by 40% in fuel price between now and 2020, by 2020, you are in good shape, you see, because automatically firms will innovate in clean by that time. So the conclusion is that technical change can be directed towards clean innovation through price mechanism, through the carbon tax. Past dependence is important because of firm level, your stock of past innovation and the spillovers, the fact that your innovators come more from, dirty country or clean country. The bad news is that clean stocks may never catch up with dirty stock without further policy intervention. But the good news is that early action now can become self-sustaining later due. Simulation suggests that pretty big increase in prices are needed to meet the goal. And I didn't show that, if you allow for both the carbon tax and the subsidy to clean, then you don't have to increase by 40% the carbon tax. Then you can reduce a bit and still make, if you combine with it, you can have maybe 20, 25% combined with research subsidy. Then you can, by a reasonable deadline, have the clean technology catch up with the dirty technology. So the next steps is to look at other policies, and in particular, what we are currently doing is to look at the energy transition. So I think I stop there. Thank you very much.